Amen. As I'm sure most of you are aware tonight, the background to the Psalm 137 is the Babylonian captivity. You can read all about a lot of the things that happened there in the book Obadiah, where the Babylonian war machine marched in. Edom were watching, but Babylon, they did the work. They murdered, they took captive, they looted, they destroyed, and then they left, and they took the captives with them to Babylon. And for that reason, and understandably tonight, the sentiments here of the captives that are found in this psalm, they are very mournful. Now, there are some commentators who believe that this psalm was composed by Jeremiah, who was known as the prophet of tears, and that he sent it to his countrymen in captivity in order that it would awaken fond memories of better days. And that seems, whether he did that or not, that seems to have taken place as we read through this psalm. And it says there, by the rivers of Babylon, there we sat down. There was an old pop group years ago, I don't know which one it was, but they had a song and it went, you know, by the rivers of Babylon, there we sat down. I wasn't saved when that song would have been in the church or anything, but I've always remembered those words. And at that time, I never thought that the time would come when I would be preaching from the text of the psalm where those words were found. They may have sung it in order to sell records at that, or singles at that time. But you know, when we look at this passage tonight, it says there, by the rivers of Babylon, by the Euphrates, the Tigris, and the other rivers there and their tributaries. They sat in a place that was shading them. A place beside the river, and there they wept. Now, we need to ask a couple of questions at this time. Why were they there? These were the people that God had chosen, his chosen people. They were just men and women like you and I. And they had their weaknesses. And I'm sure, like you and I, they had their faults as well, even in living together with each other. But the reason that they were there was not their weakness, but it was their waywardness. I mentioned to you just a little bit earlier there the book Obadiah, and you will see what happened in Obadiah is mentioned there in verse 7. That is direct reference to what we read about in Obadiah, where Edom was watching Babylon as they plundered and devastated the city of Jerusalem. And there was there at that time among God's chosen people a waywardness, a drifting of heart from him, a putting of him on the margins of everything in their lives. And now there was with them, there was barrenness, bitterness, and brokenness. Because many commentators have agreed that the only people that could ever be happy in Babylon were the Babylonians. There was nothing there to encourage or edify or to strengthen or to give joy to those who were not Babylonians. The name Babylon carries the meaning of confusion or confused place. Now, these people that we're reading about here, who had formerly been in Jerusalem, Zion here, that's what the reference is to, Jerusalem. Jerusalem is the city of peace. And that is where they had come from. And now it says there, they have hanged their harps upon the willows. Whenever you go down by the riverside, you see the water lilies and you see the various weeds that go around the edge of a river or lake or whatever. And I don't know what your perception tonight is of a willow, but these willows were known as the weeping willows of Babylon. And they grew to be trees. They grew to be very, very big. And their branches were very long and slender. And it was upon these branches that the captives in Babylon, they hanged their harps. Now, all of what we have to say tonight really centers around those words. We hanged our harps upon the willows. If you read in Ezra chapter 2, and you will know that Ezra and Nehemiah, those books detail a lot about the return from the captivity. You see in Ezra chapter 2, there were at least 128 musicians, probably others as well. And the notable thing here is that when they went into captivity, were dragged away to Babylon, they brought their harps with them. They brought them with them there to the land of their captivity. But now these harps are hanging on the weeping willows, or these little trees. And someone has said that the harp hanging on the weeping willow better harmonized with the feelings of the people at that time than what they were accustomed to. They were in Jerusalem, the city of peace, the place where God was, knowing His blessing. But they turned away from Him. And what a picture we have, ladies and gentlemen, this evening in this psalm of the Christian who is in Bypath Meadow. The one who is lost out with God. And just as Babylon for these people was misery from one end to the other, their liberty was gone. And the song went with it. It was away as well. How can we sing the Lord's song in a strange land? Verse 4 tells us. And as we think of all of that tonight, what a picture we have of men and women in Northern Ireland. A people who once enjoyed the peace of God, the blessing of God, the presence of God in a special way that only God's people can understand. It has to be said of so many that they have hanged their harps on the willows. They're not in the place of peace anymore. They're not lowering the Lord's blessing and His presence anymore. Their hearts are not in tune with God anymore. But there is hope tonight for such a person. Because remember we said they brought their harps with them to the place of captivity. Maybe in their thinking at that time, hopefully one day we will be able to use them again. And we know that in answer to their prayers and regarding their situation, when you read Obadiah, all of it, what a turnaround there was. These were God's chosen people. He was grieved by them, but He loved them still. And what an invitation then there is to men and women in Bypath Meadow to recapture the song. To take the harp down again from the willows and to know the blessing of the Lord. As we look tonight at we hanged our harps upon the willows, I have three very simple thoughts to bring to your attention this evening. I have three words. The first one is arriving. Arriving. Do you see what it says there in verse 1? It says, by the rivers of Babylon, there we sat down. Now the thought behind the word sat down here is of the thought being among the people that there's something permanent about this. That it is going to be a long-term habitation. So you can understand tonight that when they sat down, you can understand why they wept. It says there in verse 1, we sat down and we wept. They had quite a journey from Jerusalem. But there's something that we dare not miss tonight, and it is this, that this journey to Babylon did not start in Jerusalem. Yes, they could look back through the days or the weeks, whatever it was, to that time when the Babylonian warriors all came in around them. They had no chance. Those who were trying to escape, the Edomites blocked them and handed them over to the Babylonians. They could look back to that, in a sense, as to the beginning of their journey to Babylon. But I want to say tonight that their journey did not start in Jerusalem. This journey to Babylon, to this place of bitterness and barrenness and brokenness, it had begun in their heart. That's where it all started. Joy had once brightened their lives. And God was good to them. They may not have had everything they wanted, but they had everything they needed. And they had God's presence. They had His ear in prayer. They knew His favor. They had time and again proved Him. And joy indeed had brightened their lives for long enough. But that joy is now totally eclipsed, as we find them in this situation, by the depression that is hanging over their heads. A broken-hearted people, there's no question about that. Broken-hearted because they're far away from where they used to be. That's it. They're far away from where they used to be. Maybe you would turn to Jeremiah chapter 25. The captivity is foretold here. And in this chapter we're going to see some of the reasons why they arrived there and sat down and wept. We won't read all of the chapter, but we will read verse 3. It says, "From the 13th year of Josiah, the son of Ammon, king of Judah, even unto this day, that is the 23rd year, the word of the Lord hath come unto you, and I have spoken unto you, rising early and speaking, but ye have not hearkened." Now, think of verse 3. You could write across verse 3 there, "There is no hearing." There's no listening to the word. That should have been the case when they listened to the word, but there's no listening to the word. You look there in verse 4, it says, "And the Lord has sent unto you all His servants the prophets, rising early and sending them, but ye have not hearkened, nor inclined your ear to hear." Where it says they're inclined your ear to hear, it's not completely a repetition of hearken. It's meaning that no heart for the word. So there's no hearing of the word, then no heart for the word. And that leads on to verse 6, where there's no heart worship. See what it says? "And go not after other gods, and serve them, to worship them, and provoke me not to anger with the works of your hands, and I will do you no hurt." You see, the works of your hands, that refers to the self-will. It's just man all over the world, time and time again. No heart worship for the Lord, no close fellowship with Him. But if you look there at verse 9, you will see that God uses means. It says, "Behold, I will send and take all the families of the north, saith the Lord, and Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon." A note here that He says, "my servant." God uses means. He says, "my servant, and will bring them against the land, and against the inhabitants thereof, and all of these nations round about them, and will utterly destroy them, and make them an astonishment, and a hissing, and a perpetual desolation." God was grieved with their lives. And that is why we find them sitting in Babylon weeping, and why their harps are hung upon the willow trees, and why there's great heaviness in their heart. You see, they can look way back to Jerusalem, but they need to go on that and look back to that time when in their hearts, they departed from God's ways. It's all here in Jeremiah 25 and in other verses as well. We can say tonight that He gave them the land and they defiled it. The students soon started chasing after their own ways. When you read about man going after his own ways in the Bible, it's speaking of the flesh. And Galatians shows us that the flesh always wars against the spirit. Every Christian knows that. If you want to go on with the Lord, you're in a battle and you must fight the old man. You must determine to stick close to the Lord and to lean on Him and to look to Him if you want to live for Him. But He gave them the land and they defiled it. And when I look at that tonight and think of this arriving and sitting down and weeping, I cannot help but think of some people who once loved the Lord. And He was giving them blessing and meeting their need, encouraging their heart. And for whatever reason, they're in Babylon tonight. The song's gone. The joy has gone. And the harp has hanged upon the willows. Remember Elijah, mighty man. Dare not speak about him too harshly. And he was greatly used of the Lord and showed courage that very few other men could ever show, standing against the prophets of Baal. And then he ran away into the wilderness at the words of a woman. And the word that came to him was, "What doest thou here, Elijah? What doest thou here, Elijah?" You see, Elijah didn't belong running away and out in the desert. He was a man for the forefront of the battle. So wee boy one time, I don't know if I've mentioned this before to you or not, but he had a relative, a man who, I think it was his uncle, who loved the meetings and loved the Lord and was saved and doing well. And then other things crept in. And he was in the pub. And his wee nephew walked up to him one day on the bar stool, and he just simply said to him, he said, "What doest thou here, Elijah?" And you know, the Lord took the words of that young boy to draw that individual back to himself. He'd been hearing the story, and I believe it was some woman or girl in the Sunday school had been telling him, "What doest thou here, Elijah?" That Elijah belonged going on with the Lord. So he went to his uncle and he said, "What doest thou here, Elijah? And you look across Northern Ireland tonight." And I'm not being critical, I'm just stating a fact. Many have lost out, and it's easy to lose out. He gave them the land and they defiled it. He gave them the law and they defied it. They wanted to do their own thing. He gave them the Lord, that is himself, and they denied him. They denied him. Like Lot. Lot could say whatever he wanted to his sons-in-law when they were coming out of Sodom, but it didn't matter. In his life before that time, when they were coming up out of Sodom, in his life before that, he denied the Lord. And whenever he would come to his sons-in-law and he warned them of the impending judgment, the Bible says that he was as one that mocked unto his sons-in-law. What an awful tragedy that is. Whenever we speak for the Lord in some sort of crisis and people look at us and think, "Well, you're one to be talking like that. You don't have a testimony." That's exactly how it was with these people who were God's chosen people when they came along to Babylon. There was no joy there. There was no happiness among them there. You see, there was indifference in their heart. Because it says there that they remembered Zion. They remembered Zion. I've mentioned to you there that Zion is mentioned as the same place as Jerusalem. And Jerusalem is the city of peace. But the reference to Zion here also represents the place of God's presence. There's nowhere like it. In a sense, you and I know the Lord's presence as we are out tomorrow. You may be in the factory or the office or wherever you happen to be employed, or wife, you may be in the shop getting groceries for your family and all of those things. But now all they know is to be shackled by fear and apprehension all around them. We read in the Word that in thy presence is fullness of joy, and at thy right hand there are pleasures forevermore. And I know that sometimes we refer to it and think that is a picture of heaven. And it may refer to heaven in some ways. But the reference to "in thy presence is fullness of joy, and at thy right hand are pleasures forevermore," that's speaking of now. Now. And I said that there, that wherever you may be tomorrow, you know the presence of the Lord in a sense. But as you come along to church, you know it in that marked way, that God is here and not to bless us. These people used to know that. Whenever they were in Jerusalem, the place of peace and the place of God's presence. But now fear fills their hearts all of the time. It says over there in Proverbs chapter 1, it is, Proverbs chapter 1, in the verse 14 and the verse 14. That's what it is. Proverbs 14 and verse 14. It says, "The backslider in heart shall be filled with his own ways." Do you see that? The backslider in heart shall be filled with his own ways. And this backsliding, just as it began with these God's chosen people here. It began in their hearts, and it was just a little step. Maybe it was also a willful step. It was a willful step, but a little step nonetheless, to depart from his ways. And then there was one step after another, until at last there's literally no resistance. And they're just going with the flow. Perhaps that first step was taken with a divided heart, and they thought, no, I better not go that road. I need to go the Lord's way and stick close to him. And there was that counting the cost and weighing of things up. But then after a while, they got used to it. And it was just further and further and further away from the Lord's ways. Well, it says here, the backslider in heart shall be filled with his own ways. What are his own ways? Doubt. Feelings of alienation. The backslider doesn't feel at home, really, in Christian meetings, say like a prayer meeting, because he feels he's lost out to the Lord and hasn't prayed for ages. He doubts the things that he used to embrace and hold on to with 100% confidence in them. But I know some who've lost out that way, and I don't speak of them all when I say this, but some have become so hard and so bad-hearted and so envious and so just bitter in themselves that it's evident to everyone there's a person is not in the place where they belong. And that's exactly how it was with these people long ago. They were not in the place where they belong. And you know, when the Christian has hanged up the harp, the song is gone, they can trace it all back to perhaps something relatively trivial, small. Maybe it was an envious look, a selfish motive. And maybe it was something that, in the great scheme of things, was very, very small. And they took that step, and then another one, and then another one, and took them further and further and further away from the Lord. And in Babylon, remember, this journey started in the heart. And there's a lovely song. We're going to sing it hopefully later on tonight. It says, Where is the blessedness I knew when first I saw the Lord? Where is the soul refreshing view of Jesus and his word? You know, folks, that ought to be the Christian's experience all the time. All the time. That hymn also says, the dearest idol I have known, whate'er that idol be, help me deter it from thy throne and worship only thee. That's what the backslider must do tonight. Deal with it, whatever it is that has taken them away from the Lord. If I can mention again here, the bitterness of Babylon here, Babylon meaning confusion, that is what meets them every morning. That's what meets the backslider every morning. Just confusion, because they're not where they belong, not where they ought to be and used to be, and yet they're spoiled for the world. So they can't find any happiness and contentment running with the world either. So it's fear, misery, apprehension, I'm really not liking anything sometimes or anyone in Christianity. People who are praying for them and all of those things. So tonight, as we think thereof and we hanged our harps on the willows, the first thought is of arriving. The journey began in their heart, not in Jerusalem. And with the backslider, the journey away from God doesn't begin with someone else. It begins in our heart. And that is where the trouble stems from. The problem is one of the heart. But I want to move on here as we look at, we hanged our harps on the willows. I mean, notice here, not only arriving, but I want you to notice attitude. Please look at the end of verse 3. This is the Babylonians, what they said to them. They had carried them away captive, and it says there, they required of us a song. And they that wasted us required of us mirth, saying, sing us one of the songs of Zion. I want to state very clearly tonight that when a man or woman drifts from the Lord, in this case, these people didn't, and men and women never will, find that drifting and the promises that seem to come with it to keep their word. Oh, it seems that, I'd have far less restriction if I got away from the Lord. I'd have more me time. I'd get on far better because everyone else seems to do so well. That never happens when we drift away from the Lord. I just want to read quickly to you there what it says over in John's Gospel. John's Gospel, chapter 15, I'll read it for you. John 15 and the verse 19. It says, and I want to listen to this very carefully, and this is to do with the attitude that we find here. If ye were of the world would love his own. But because ye are not of the world, but I have chosen you out of the world, therefore the world hateth you. Do you see now what we're saying? You know, whenever God's people lose out with him and they wander off and they get to Babylon and the harp is hung up and the song is gone and the joy is gone and all of the things that they used to love, they seem to be gone as well. Don't think for one moment that the world system will love you for it. They'll not. You'll not get a clap on the back from them. You remember Samson. He was used. He was useful. He was a very motivated man. But he tripped himself up. Got involved with a woman, a girl. And over there in the book of Judges in chapter 16, he was so caught up with this woman that he wasn't keeping a check on his own heart. And Delilah, she deceived him. And it says there in Judges 16, the very end of that, near the end of verse 20, it says, and he wist not. The words means he did not know. That's what it means. He did not know that the Lord was departed from him. Now listen, he was still a saved man. But the Lord's presence was gone. Because he'd been disobedient, he had turned from the Lord, and he'd hearkened to the voice of this treacherous Delilah one. It says there, he wist not that the Lord had departed from him. You see, he didn't know. But this is for sure, he was always going to find out. He was always going to find out because he went out his other times there to the Philistines and they took him. They could never do that before. They took him and they made him. If you look there in the verses, you will see in verse 25 that it says, they said, call for Samson that he may make us sport. And they called for Samson out of the prison house and he made them sport. What an awful shame. What an awful sad situation for a man who was used of the Lord. And folks, why shame and guilt and regret can all be found with these people as they are now in Babylon? There's one thing that stands out. And if I were to ask you what it was tonight, I'm sure some of you right away would be able to answer me. The one thing that stands out with them, now their hearts are hung up. Their heads are hung down. The one thing that stands out is not their feeling of guilt or remorse or shame. The one thing that stands out is their silence. Their silence. Look at verse 4. How shall we sing the Lord's song in a strange land? Did you notice there they don't call it one of the songs of Zion? They call it the Lord's song. I believe it's the song of deliverance. You see, one of the songs that they did sing was the song of deliverance, which we know, we find it as the first song in the Bible. You find it in Exodus 15. It's the song of Moses after deliverance through the Red Sea, and they sang it. But they can't sing it here because they feel that it doesn't belong here. How can you sing songs of deliverance here whenever you're brought into bondage because of your own heart and because of your losing out with the Lord? And one of the things that stands out with them here is this. Brethren and sisters, there's no profit from in any way aligning yourself with the world system. They're mocking them here as they're saying, it says that they wasted them, they required of us mirth. They want to make fun of them. Sing us one of the songs of Zion, you people from Jerusalem. Having a good old laugh. Just like these people who got Samson, mighty man that he was, made fun with him and sport with him. And dear Christian, Don't expect to be embraced honestly by the world. It'll never happen. It'll never happen. The attitude we find here is one, the world is no friend to grace. And the Christian is spoiled for the things of the world. You see, he has tasted and seen that the Lord is good. And then if he loses out, or she loses out, they're just like these people in Babylon. They remember. It says here, they wept when they remembered Zion, the place of peace and the place of God's presence. It brought tears to their, not only to their eyes, but I believe tears to their heart. What an awful change there has been with them. Over there in Ephesians chapter 5, it says there in verse 18, you know the verse well, be not drunk with wine wherein is excess, but be filled with the Spirit. It says in speaking, and we mentioned this a few weeks ago and tied it in with Colossians chapter 3, speaking to yourselves in psalms and hymns and spiritual songs, singing and making melody in your heart to the Lord. That's a great position to be in. They weren't in it now. They weren't in it now. There was no melody in their heart at this time. And dear person tonight, maybe it's a long time from that melody has been in your heart. Your harp has been hanged up for a long time. And you've maybe discovered, and I trust this is the case tonight, you have discovered the world doesn't love you. Oh, there's nice people there and people who will help you. And if you're sick, there's some really great people who will take care of you in their profession, in hospitals and whatever, and all of that. But they don't love you. They don't love you the way the Lord loves you. The world doesn't love you the way Christians love your soul and love your fellowship and love your company. And that is the attitude of the world. The world is no friend to grace. But I have one final thing to say here as we think of these words, we hanged our harps upon the willows. Not only was the arriving here, the journey started in their heart, and the attitude they discovered now, it brought them to this point. They're to be brought to this point before they realized, we're losing out here. Because you see the turnaround in the psalm. It says, how shall we sing the Lord's song in this strange land? And then some of the things they say brings us to our final thought. And we have the arriving, the attitude. Now we have the answer. Please look at verse 5. It says, if I forget thee, O Jerusalem, let my right hand forget her cunning. These are fond thoughts of where they used to be. It says, if I do not remember thee, let my tongue cleave to the roof of my mouth, for I prefer not Jerusalem above my chief joy. Now you can see there where they say, if I prefer not Jerusalem above my chief joy. They're starting to prioritize. Get things right. So there's fond thoughts of where they used to be. There's the prioritizing of things now. They're going to prefer Jerusalem above their chief joy. But in verse 7, they're praying again. It says, remember, O Lord, the children of Edom, that is the Edomites, in the day of Jerusalem, that is in the day that Jerusalem fell, Obadiah tells you all about it, who said, raise it, even to the foundation thereof. And folks, the answer was, when they started praying, things would start changing. They not only remembered the Lord with a head knowledge, but they looked back from in their heart to better days. Days when the sun shone brightly for them. Yes, it wasn't perfect. And as I mentioned, they probably didn't have everything they wanted, but they had all they needed. And they could see His hand providing their every need. They were looking back to that. They're saying now, I need to prefer this above everything else. All of the other things can take second place, but this is what I need to set my heart upon. And now they turn with true hearts to the Lord and say, remember, O Lord, the children of Edom in the day of Jerusalem. Now, the Lord answered that prayer. Read Obadiah carefully, especially from verse 11 on ahead, and you will see the devastating thing that come upon the Babylonians at that time, and indeed the Edomites for siding with them, even though it was only in a small way. You see, the Lord still loved these people that were brought to Babylon. And now they started praying. These victims were to become victors. And you know the situation there in Israel and Nehemiah. When the opportunity was there, the opportunity arose for them to come back to Jerusalem again. Happy day for many. And dear backslidden person tonight, the Lord gives you the opportunity to get into victory and to blessing again. I know that Christians are not perfect, and I speak as one who is far from perfect. But I'll tell you this, Christians are great friends. They're great people to know. And I want to say something else, that God has something for you to do. Make it right tonight. Deal with the matter now. Get back into blessing again. What use is a harp hanging on the willows? Maybe looking at it and think, oh, I hope I can use that again someday, and maybe sing. You've done that for long enough. Tonight is the night when we need to get back into blessing. Fond thoughts, as in verse 5, prioritizing God's peace and God's presence needs to come first for us. And then the praying, remember, O Lord. Good to say it tonight, Lord, I want to make it right. Remember me. Give me back the joy of salvation again. Don't waste, brethren and sisters, don't waste another hour living at a great distance from the Lord, following afar off, being second best for Him, but rather be at your best for Him, and He will bless you abundantly. I trust as we remember tonight that we hanged our harps upon the willows, that the Lord will draw you back to Himself and encourage your heart tonight to go on with Him.